Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Welcome, everybody, to the Roto World Basketball Show. I'm Dan Titus, filled in for Vaughn Delzell as your host from Yahoo Sports. And I'm joined, as usual, with Raphael Johnson and special guest Noah Rubin from Roto World as well. The 2023-2024 season is going to end on Sunday. So if you're still playing fantasy hoops, God bless you. But we still have plenty to discuss. We'll run through some of the injury news for the week, talk about the schedule, some notable moments, good and bad, from this week in hoops, and also dig into some fantasy awards. But first things first, before we get started, Noah, welcome to the show. I know many of our viewers and listeners know who you are, but figure I'd give you the floor, man. Tell these people who you are and kind of what you've been doing for Roto World.
Yeah, man. Thank you guys for letting me join you. It's exciting to be back on here. It's been, goodness, it's probably since some preseason content since I've been on. But yeah, just been keeping up to date with every blurb that comes my way. It's been a busy season, but it's been a lot of fun. We are getting to the end of it, but yeah, just keeping up with the content, with the blurbs, and then playoffs are almost here.
Thankfully, man, I feel like this has been a long, arduous season. And for those that don't know, all the player notes that you're reading, man, that is Noah and Raphael doing their good work there to keep you guys updated on everything, on every player and every obscurity player, two-way contract player that you may not have heard of in the league. But I wanted to ask you guys off the top, man, have a lot of stuff to discuss, obviously some notable injuries, but where are we drafting Jalen Brunson next year? I think it's pretty clear that this guy has hit another tier of level of his style of play. And he was a fourth round pick this year. I think that that's fair, but we know Julius Randle's been out, but is there a case to be made for him to be like a second round pick next year?
I think so. Obviously, the Randle question is going to be something worth keeping an eye on here. And I think the playoffs are going to have something to do with that. Like, if this team goes on a serious run with the roster as it's currently constructed, and you need to pay Isaiah Hartenstein if they want to bring him back because he'll be a free agent, his price is jumped significantly over the 2-year, $16 million deal he got from the Knicks a couple years back. So I think maybe you kick the tires on a Randle trade if the Knicks do well in the postseason, see what you can get back. And if they move him, I think it becomes quite clear that Jalen Brunson is going to be the star of that show offensively. He already was, but they don't really have any other like ball dominant guys in this current rotation. So no Randle, you know, depending on who you bring back in terms of players and draft capital, I could make a good case for him being a second rounder. And I feel more secure in taking him in the second round than, say, before this season when Mikal Bridges was going off the board then in a lot of leagues.
I think that there's a case to be made for him to go second round. I think that if Julius Randle is traded, that definitely improves his stock a little bit. I think I'd feel a lot more comfortable taking him in the third. Maybe late second is probably the earliest that I would take him. But maybe they will be able to trade Julius Randle for Mikal Bridges and just get all the boys back together. Just have them all sitting up, because that would, you know, maybe impact things a little bit, but yeah. Or maybe a realistic trade to get some other Villanova guys on there. But yeah, I'd say late second round, early third is fair at this point.
Yeah, I think it's fair, man. He's 31st over the course of the year in per game value, but over the last month, man, I think he was first in points leagues last week, third in nine cat leagues. Like, I mean, this is just an insane run by, I would say, a top 15 player right now. Is that too bold?
I don't think so.
I think Raph would call him top five.
Yeah, I don't know about top five, but yeah, you're talking top 15. That's like all NBA territory. And yeah, you can't tell me he hasn't played at that level. So yeah, I'd say top 15.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. It feels weird to say out loud.
That was the voice of reason right now. It's like, let's not get too carried away on Jalen Brunson.
The way he's been playing, that's totally fair, but it's just crazy to think about. You know, I know this, I'm not the first person to bring this up, but when he first signed that contract, it was, wow, I can't believe they paid him that much money. And now it's looking like an absolute bargain. You're like, no, he's playing at an all NBA level. It's just crazy to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely crazy to see. What's more crazy to see is now Patrick Beverley is starting for the Milwaukee Bucks because Malik Beasley's been terrible. And Doc Rivers is just trying to shake things up. But as you shake things up, other things may happen. And Giannis Antetokounmpo went down with a non-contact injury yesterday. Reports are that he avoided the dreaded Achilles injury. It just seems like it's a calf strain. But there was no timetable attached to his return. So how worried are you about the Milwaukee Bucks? And given that we only have a handful of days left in fantasy basketball, is Pat Bev a pickup?
I think as far as being worried about Giannis, like, I think there's like, you should be. I think they played the Magic twice and then the Thunder once over their final three games. So it's three pretty tough games. They're still fighting for playoff positioning. They've clinched a playoff spot, so they won't be in the play-in, but they could fall a couple spots if they were to drop all three games because they don't have Giannis out there. I know Chris Middleton isn't playing tonight, just second night of a back-to-back. So I think Pat Bev is a guy that, just based off the opportunity that you might be interested in streaming, he's not like a super appealing fantasy option, though. But the fact that no Giannis and no Middleton tonight definitely makes him a guy that you have to kind of say, yeah, no, maybe I would do that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Malik Beasley, for that reason, would also be on the radar, just because not having two of your three key guys, just because he isn't starting, I don't think that automatically eliminates him from a fantasy standpoint right now. So, that roster, it's like the guys that you'd want to pick up, they're already rostered in a lot of leagues. Like Bobby Portis is probably going to be the biggest winner if you're still in that in an active league right now in terms of fantasy. But it's already gone, basically. So I don't think you can add like a Pat Connaughton or an AJ Green. So it's basically Beasley or Beverly, and then that's about it.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. And the Bucks play tonight. The only days you're really able to stream this week are Wednesday and Thursday. So you're really just picking them up for one day, this loner here. So look at the injury report. It's getting ugly. I think you could make a play for Pat Bev tonight. But after that, you know, it's pretty much you're just guessing at that point with such a loaded slate. But we did get some good news out of Minnesota. Karl-Anthony Towns could be returning as early as this weekend. Anthony Edwards hinted after his 51-point performance that he could be making his return. I mean, what does this mean for the Minnesota Timberwolves, Raph? Obviously, this is going to impact Naz Reid, but I think that this is more of a playoff impact than a fantasy impact.
Yeah, I'm not expecting too much from Towns once he returns, if it happens to be this weekend. I think it's more about getting the chemistry right and then getting some of that rust off before the playoffs, because they're going to have another week, you know, between games after Sunday. So, yeah, I think Reid, if you have him, you're still going to hold on to him at this point. There's really no point in dropping someone of his caliber in fantasy if you're still playing. So, yeah, I don't expect much of an impact at all beyond, you know, their playoff rotation and whether or not Cat can take on a reasonable workload as they look to try to make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, Noah. Yeah, I was going to say real quick, how are you ranking, or, you know, because you do a lot of dynasty, how are you kind of factoring in Naz Reid's performance now when Karl-Anthony Towns was out? I mean, this guy has been a top 40 player over the last 2 weeks, top 60 over the last month. Is this someone that you're actually going to be drafting higher, knowing that, you know, he's not going to be playing as many minutes as he is now down the stretch for fantasy managers?
Yeah, I think as far as dynasty, like just looking ahead at what he has been doing and then trying to project, okay, Minnesota has seen this. Like, they know that they have a logjam in the front court. Are they going to continue to say, we're just going to have Naz Reid off the bench with Kat and Gobert starting? Maybe if it works in this playoffs, like, they try and do that for as long as they can. But at some point, like, they're probably going to trade Kat and Gobert. In my mind, it probably makes more sense to move off of Kat, just as opposed to having two shooting bigs with Naz Reid and Kat having, you know, guys that have different skill sets. So whether it's a Kat trade or even a Gobert trade or a Naz Reid trade, at some point, this guy's going to be a starter. Like, I had him ranked 113th in Dynasty after the trade deadline. And then he's just kind of done it again, where he's played really well because of an injury in front of him. So I think he's a guy that should certainly be a top 100 guy in Dynasty at this point, just because of what he's shown when he's gotten the opportunity. And at some point, like, he's going to be a full-time starter.
Yeah, I think that you said the key thing is that I think that they're going to have to make the decision, that being the Minnesota Timberwolves, do we trade Cat or not? And I think the answer is yes. You can't trade Gobert for how much you gave up for him, I think at this point. And he's also been, you know, a defensive player of the year. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I think it is a bit redundant of a role. And I think you see Naz Reid just playing so well in that role. I mean, that what did he drop, 30-plus on the Lakers? Yeah. With Megan Thee Stallion sitting front row. I mean, that dude just – he's just been cooking. I think it's notable, though, that the Wolves are 41-19 with Cat. So it's not like Cat is that bad, but I think we've seen this – let's see how he performs in the playoffs in a different scenario now with everyone healthy, kind of see how this chemistry kind of shakes out. But I want to go back to you, Raph, on the Atlanta Hawks. They also got good news that Trae Young – has been cleared for practice, which means that he's probably looking at a return in the near future. Great news for the Hawks, because they could definitely use his services. But I mean, from a fantasy perspective, you know, what do you think is, who's this going to hurt? Obviously DeJounte Murray, but what other trickle down effect are we going to see? And maybe is it more Jalen Johnson's latest ankle injury?
You know, I think the Johnson injury is going to have a greater impact. I should say that kind of protects Bogdan Bogdanovic, if anything, just because they're going to need his scoring just as much as they have needed it with Trae Young out. So whether or not that happens, did they get enough run in before the end of the regular season? Because I think Tuesday is the 9-10 play-in game, if I'm not mistaken. So I think at this point, you're trying to see what you can do to potentially wrestle away home court advantage from the Bulls for that 9 spot. But I don't really know if it's going to impact me. Like Kobe Bufkin, nobody was really rostering him before this. So he's going to lose out on minutes once Young gets back. But yeah, I don't think the combination of his return and Jalen Johnson's injury kind of protects the guys who may have been like streamers beforehand.
Yeah, agreed. What do you think about that, Noah? How are you playing the Atlanta situation?
Yeah, the reports are that he could return as early as tonight. He's officially listed questionable. So if it is the case where he's in Jalen Johnson, who has been ruled out, he would just kind of fill out that starting spot. Yeah. I would imagine it's a smaller starting unit. And that's just kind of what they roll with, DeAndre Hunter at the 4, Bogey at the 3. If he's still out, then Vete Krejci will be starting again. He had some solid games as a starter when they were dealing with, you know, injuries to Jalen Johnson. I don't know if he's a guy that I'd be looking to roster. Maybe tonight if Trae Young is out, just because there's 8 games and he would be a streamable guy. But even when he started, the numbers haven't been consistent. But yeah, the other main impact is that DeJounte Murray isn't going to have 13 assists like he did last night. Like, he had a triple-double last night. He's not going to really be doing that with Trae Young trying to share the ball there. But I think Trae Young will be able to come right in and just play normal minutes. It was a left finger injury, so there's nothing to say that he wasn't able to continue to shoot with his right hand and be able to stay in shape. So I don't think it's going to be a situation where he comes in and has any sort of minutes restriction that allows some other guys to see minutes for at least a couple of games.
And Raph, are you scared about the Atlanta Hawks potentially in the playoffs this year? You know, they've always had the edge on a certain team of yours.
Now that they played the playoffs one time. One time. I know Noah mentioned in our Slack chat last night the Hawks are undefeated all time in the play-in tournament. And my response to that is they've been in the play-in tournament a few times since that run to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that's, I wouldn't want to say a full indictment on the franchise, but it makes me have questions about why they weren't able to kind of bottle up that momentum and continue to build on it. So, yeah, I'm not really worried about the Hawks, to be honest with you. No.
It'll certainly help getting Trae Young back. But, yeah, I don't think anyone's really fearing the Atlanta Hawks right now. They got to figure out, you know, getting back in the swing of things of having someone that's so ball dominant as Trae Young back into the fold here. The Lakers, they're in an interesting position. They're still a couple games out from the 8th spot. I don't think they're going to get to the 6, but the more concerning thing is that Anthony Davis has an eye injury. LeBron James is still doing some injury maintenance things. Are you worried about the Lakers at this stage from a fantasy perspective? They don't have any games on Wednesday or Thursday. So you're not really going to be able to pick up anyone if these guys don't play. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the Lakers, Noah? Start with you.
Yeah, the fact they only play two games definitely hurts. So there's not anybody that I'm going to be looking to stream because the 2 days that they play, there's 15 games and 15 games. So we're not really going to be able to stream anybody there. But it was, I don't know, I guess frustrating that they weren't able to be fully healthy last night because it was such a pivotal game. And obviously, you know, Anthony Davis went from eye soreness to nausea and headache. So it got like a little bit more serious than what it was. And LeBron was able to suit up after, I mean, I don't know exactly when he showed up to the arena, but there was definitely a tweet that said 2 hours before tip-off, he wasn't even there yet. And he showed up and had a pretty freaking good performance, which shouldn't expect anything less from him at this point. But with them sitting, I guess it's 2.5 games out of 6. Like, they're probably not going to get there.
Yeah,
they're half game back of the Kings for 8. How much further can they kind of go up? At this point, does it matter to them? Because if they're, I mean, they made it to the Western Conference Finals from the play-in last year. Are they just going to say, you know what? We feel pretty good about beating the Warriors at home and then either beating the Suns or Kings. And if we're fully healthy, so let's prioritize that. It's a decision they'll have to make.
Rack, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the Davis injury is more concerning because, like Noah said, it was just an eye injury. The last time he suffered that injury, he didn't miss a game. But then you get reports about nausea and a headache. You start to wonder about a potential concussion, you know, whether or not he would have to enter the protocols. That hasn't happened yet, so I think you're thankful in that regard. But I think that's the bigger thing for them. It's about getting healthy. Now, it's certainly a roll of the dice to go into that 9-10 game, whether you're healthy or not. But they don't have LeBron or AD. I think it's pretty proven that they're going to have their issues against the better teams. And that's all they're going to be playing pretty much from this point forward. So if they can get to 8, Sacramento has struggled a bit, and they have a pretty difficult schedule to finish the season too. So if they can get to 8, you go for it, but I don't think they're going to risk LeBron or AD in the hopes of getting to that spot.
Yeah, agreed. I think Noah brought up a great point. You know, the fact that they've been able to get to the play-in, the play-in tournament to the Western Conference Finals, says that they've done it before. You know, they have the experience. So I think it's about being healthy right now. And shout out to Rui Hachimura, been playing very well. Austin Reeves, I expect, would probably take on more of a load. So if you're playing DFS, maybe you want to stream those guys, but probably wouldn't go too further than that. You just mentioned the Kings, Raf, and Domantas Sabonis' streak of double-doubles unfortunately came to a close at 61 games, but he still has 74 double-doubles on the year, which is the most since Moses Malone in 1980-1981. Raf, I guess, where do you stand on Domantas Sabonis in terms of his fantasy season? And, you know, he's pretty much been a bona fide, you know, late second. Could get into the conversation of early second. Mm-hmm. Some conversation of late first, I guess, just based off of your, you know, your roster build. But, yeah, I think Domantas Sabonis has been probably one of the more underrated players. Easily should have been the All-Star, in my opinion. So, hopefully, he gets All-NBA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. For me, he's a safe second rounder in terms of fantasy value. Turnovers can be a concern at times. I think he had 6 against the Thunder. The job they did on him defensively, I don't think anyone's defended him that well this season in terms of what they're able to do. It felt like, all right, he's got his rebounds. He should be able to get 2 more points.
Yeah.
But it just never happened. So you credit the Thunder for what they're able to do. I think he's a second rounder for me. In terms of fantasy, where I would take him next year in the fall. So if anything, you're looking at the Kings. I wonder what Keon Ellis's recent play will do for their plans moving forward, because he's played really well, shot the ball well. He had 5 three-pointers last night, if I'm not mistaken, I think 26 points. Kevin Huerter kind of struggled this season before the injury. So it's like, remember in the preseason, there were talks about either him or Chris Duarte filling that starting role. Kevin won the job, but Keon Ellis, is this recent, you know, play, is that enough to make them rethink some things with regard to either Huerter or Davion Mitchell moving forward?
No.
Yeah. I think, first with Sabonis, Raph, when I was blurbing last night, I got done, you know, writing one, and then it shows the main screen, which is the most recent blurb, and I saw the headline that Sabonis, they like double-double streak ends at 61, like my heart dropped. I was like, almost let out like a verbal, like, no, yeah. Like I was so disappointed because I just wanted it to keep going. And then I got more mad that it was points, not rebounds, that kept doing it. So I'm like, come on, man, 10 points. But we did participate in that early, ridiculously early mock draft. You guys were both in it too. Sabonis did go 10th in that. So maybe this is a guy that does go in the first round. Keon Ellis is a guy that I really like too. I think that he does kind of, you know, the fact that he's hitting threes is, I think, opens up a lot more for them as well, because before it was like, okay, Herter makes sense because another floor spacer, there's no reason for like so many shooters on that team, guys that can space the floor, do things with the ball in their hands, like a passing five and Sabonis and four shooters is really hard to stop. But now Keon Ellis is a guy that can go in there and play really, really good defense. I was streaming him in a dynasty league and he was giving me a ton of steals, ton of blocks for a couple of weeks there. So definitely a guy that I think has a lot of fantasy upside from the fact that he can hit threes and provide defensive stats, both steals and blocks from a guard spot. And I think if I were the Kings, I would look at potentially starting him over Herter, over Chris Duarte. And like Davion Mitchell probably isn't doing much for me at this point anyway, but.
Yeah, I think it's a great point because Malik Monk is a free agent. I'd be hard pressed if they didn't give him some money. I mean, he is the potential sixth man of the year right now. Like they got to pay him, and just that chemistry that he has with De'Aaron Fox and Domas Sabonis is unparalleled. But I think it is a good point about Kevin Herter being on the hot seat, because Keon Ellis has played very well. And I think to Noah's point about the 3-and-D, that's something that I think has been inconsistent with Herter, right? Either the shot's falling, or he's lacking on defense, or he's actually strapping up on defense and he's not hitting anything. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch going into next season. Cause I think Keon Ellis could be one of those sneaky late round picks that you have if he can wind up getting into that starting lineup. You said something else that was interesting. What was it? It'll come back to me. Either way, let's get to this Clippers and Suns game. Last night was bizarre, man. Like, I turned it on a little bit late. They were up by like 30 points, I want to say. And then, you know, the Suns made a little comeback, still wind up losing by double digits. But, I mean, where are we with the Clippers? Because they've been a pretty erratic team. We talked about it over the last couple of weeks. Raf, you know, Kawhi Leonard's obviously been out for the last week or two with his injuries. They're trying to get healthy. Definitely more important. James Harden's play has gone down significantly relative to the rest of the season. But then they come out and play well against the Suns team. So I don't know. Where do you stand on both of these teams as we head into the playoffs?
I'm tired of both of them. I'll be honest with you. Like, the Clippers, they were up like 35-4 at one point.
Yeah.
And obviously, I know the whole adage of everybody makes a run in the NBA, but it's like the run that Phoenix was allowed to make in the second half, like, that can't happen. You know, maybe not having Kawhi and Harden kind of caught up with the Clippers, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. It just feels like whenever you want to believe in either one of those teams, something comes up, either inconsistent play or injuries. Phoenix had their guys just all go cold at the same time last night. So it's kind of a miracle they're able to get back into the game. But yeah, I don't know. We had like an arena marriage proposal when it was like 35-4. It's like, all right, man.
I didn't even see that part. So, so this is that, like, that they cut to the break, and then they had a marriage proposal when they're up.
Yes, yes. What? There was a marriage.
Did she say yes at least this time?
She said yes. I'm not in favor of arena wedding proposals. I just think it puts the recipient on a platform they may not be ready for. It's kind of unfair to them. But beyond that, it was just like the game was just absurd. Like the momentum swings of that game are just absurd. I think the Clippers, they get Kawhi healthy, get Harden healthy. Russell Westbrook looked really good in that starting role. 199th career triple-double. So they get those guys back. I feel a little bit better about them, but they're most likely going to have to deal with Dallas in the first round. And that is a bit concerning as far as I'm concerned. When you have how they strengthen at the trade deadline and you got Luka and Kyrie. Yeah, I don't know.
Just came to me. You mentioned triple-double. So I feel like the case for Domantas going in the first round is that he leads the league in triple-doubles with Jokic this year with over 25. So I feel like there is, if they continue to play that style of play, which it seems like Mike Brown likes, there's a very good chance that he could be replicating these numbers. So, Noah, to you, what are your thoughts on the Clippers and the Suns?
I definitely feel better about the Clippers than I do about the Suns. Suns didn't have Nurkic last night, which allowed Zubats to kind of like dominate pretty much early in the game. They switched to having, instead of Drew Eubanks, like Royce O'Neal and like a small ball five, which I think maybe helped them get back in the game a little bit, but still 1 for 11 from Devin Booker. I think KD was 8 for 22 and was ended up being their leading scorer. So like Grayson Allen was also 0 of 8 from 3. Mm-hmm. So just an atrocious game from them all around, but we're able to kind of scrap back into it a little bit. No Kawhi, no Harden. They're out again tonight. They play again tonight, which is, you know, yay. But there will be no Paul George. Russ is questionable. So Clippers might just kind of say, hey, we're kind of good with where we are in the standings because they're locked in pretty much. Yeah. I don't know if it's officially been clinched, but they're playing Dallas in the first round. I think if things go one way or another, like they could be 5 and Dallas is 4, but I think that would take a couple things happening. So yeah, it's another rematch with Dallas, of course, because what else would it be? So it'll be a fun matchup. You know, Kawhi and Paul George trying to slow down Luka. The Suns, I don't know how you can be confident in what they've done. Like, obviously, when you have Kevin Durant, you have a Devin Booker, and you have Bradley Beal, you will have a chance to win every single series because you have the talent. But there's too many just glaring weaknesses. Like, you take Nurkic out, and Zubats is looking like an all-NBA center. So, like, how is that going to work in the playoffs when you're playing, you know, even in the play-in, Domantas Sabonis? And then if you lose, you're playing Anthony Davis. If you win, you're playing Nikola Jokic. So I don't know. I don't think that the path for the Suns is ideal because of the weaknesses that they have.
Well said, man. The thing that depth is going to catch up to them. Their front court is still super weak. And when you're going up against those juggernauts, man, you got to have some kind of front interior to be able to handle the likes of Anthony Davis, Nikola Jokic, et cetera. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting playoff battle we get here. Just excited that it's at least we have this playoff race at the end of the season to make basketball relevant amidst all of the you know, the tanking and the load management that's happening. Tons of rest. And just want to bring up this guy because somehow we've gone 25 minutes without talking about Victor Wembanyama. And just want to get your thoughts, guys, because Rudy Gobert is the odds-on favorite by an overwhelming majority to win Defensive Player of the Year. But do you think that Wemby should have a better case for it? No, I'll start with you.
Honestly, I think that the two factors that are going to prevent him from winning are the fact that the Spurs stink and he's a rookie. If he was a second-year player and the Spurs had 10 more wins, I think the odds would be entirely different. Because if you look at every single stat plus all the ridiculous plays, I don't remember which game. I think it was the Memphis game last night where three players were like, it was a three-on-one break. And he didn't know what to do. I don't want to shoot. Well, I don't want, it's like, it should have been a routine basketball play. Like, you've been doing that since you're five, a three-on-one, three-on-two fast break. And he just stops the whole thing. So I think what he's done is worthy of at least strong consideration. And I think that if he was a second or third year player and the Spurs were a little bit better, it may not even be much of a conversation.
Hell no. And I think I say that obviously he has the block shots and the individual defensive rating. They're 22nd in the NBA in team defensive rating at 118.8. That's hell no. Like, you can't. I know that it's an individual award, but if you look at Rudy Gobert, he anchors the best defense in the NBA. I think that's the biggest reason why he's such a clear favorite for that award from a betting standpoint. As Noah said, Vic's going to have his opportunities to win that award many times over. It's not his fault. He didn't put that roster together, but there has to be some sort of, like, I don't know if responsibility is the right word, but you can't excuse the team defensive numbers in giving him the individual award.
I think that's fair. There was a stat. I can't find it. I was trying to grab it real quick off Twitter where it was like the on-off defensive splits, and Wemby's was significantly better than everybody else. So I think that was the main like advanced stat that I was going to say. It's like,
it's a good point.
You're right. The Spurs are awful defensively even with him. And I think that is something that's, you know, they're a young team with the players that they have, not a ton of really good defenders. I think Devin Vassell has a lot of upside as a defender, but not a ton of elite defenders on a young, bad team. So yes, you're right. Like, I think after this year, he's going to be the odds on favorite for the next 15 years. But yeah, no, it shouldn't happen this year. I think that a couple of,
he'll get votes. Yeah. He'll get votes for sure.
Crazy for a rookie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all defensive team isn't out of the woods yet either, but we'll see.
He'll be on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World? Like, hey, we came to play. Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
But if you want to make even more bets, get your weekday started with Bet the Edge. Join Jay Croucher and Drew Dinsdick as they break down all things NBA, from finals contenders to award markets like Defensive Player of the Year that we just discussed. The guys will also break down the NFL Draft, Major League Baseball, and much more. New episodes drop at 6 a.m. Eastern on NBC Sports YouTube channel, and you can find them in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. So we did mention that there were some good things and some bad things. Let's talk about the bad things. What the hell are the Chicago Bulls doing? Oh, Torrey Craig. I don't know if I remember him ever making this type of a play before. I don't think I've ever seen him in a highlight mixtape ever. I don't know what his high school mixtape looks like. I haven't seen him do anything outworldly crazy in an NBA game until he attempted to throw the ball off the backboard. Unbeknownst to him, Andre Drummond was right on his back expecting the alley-oop, and I don't know what the hell Drummond was thinking. What went through your guys' mind? I'll start with you, Noah, on that play, and does that pretty much sum up the Bulls' season right now? And they're still somehow in the playoff mode. Like, they're going to be an easy exit, but still.
Yeah, they're still ahead of my team, so it's like, what can I say? But, if you look at Kobe White in that video, was pretty much exactly my reaction. He just looks so defeated. And, like, I can't blame him. Like, first of all, the audacity to do that. And if I'm not mistaken, ref, I'm sure you were keeping up with the score a little bit more. They were losing that game.
They were down 9.
Okay, so the audacity to, one, try and do that self-alley-oop on the fast break. I get you're open. Let's go get the points. It's a close game. We're not up 20 or 30. We're down. And then for Andre Drummond, like, I guess he probably assumed, like, there's no way this dude is about to just try and throw this off the glass to himself. There's no way that's what's happening. So I'm going to go get this. And then somehow the miscommunication was absolutely insane. And then next play, Drummond comes down and injures his ankle. So it's like that two play sequence, like, you're right, it probably does kind of sum up their season. But also, I think in more of a positive light, they were still able to keep that game pretty close for the most part. So I think that also kind of describes their season, because early on, it was dreadful. It was, I don't remember exactly how bad they started, what the exact record was, but it was really, really bad. And then they've come back from the play-in tournament. They're a scrappy team. Like, if they're not going to, you know, it's not a total disaster, even though it feels like it should be, but that low light, man, like, that's going to be the headline right there. Just, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was. I assume he was throwing it off the glass for Drummond, and I see Torrey start to jump for the ball himself.
Torrey still looks. And he looks shocked at the end of the moment, and he's still shocked. He's like, "Oh my god, what did I get myself into?"
It was crazy. Like Noah said, I don't know if he's done that probably since college, if he even did it there. It's like, no, what are we doing? And then they go down the other end of the floor. Drummond rolls his ankle to the point where they needed a wheelchair to take him back to the locker room. That's not funny, but it's like, you need like the Curb Your Enthusiasm music after that happens. Like, God. But yeah, they lost Zach LaVine to injury, and that opened things up for guys like Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu. But how can you really feel optimism about that team given the circumstances of that roster? You know, you got LaVine, Lonzo Ball. Apparently he's making progress, but we don't know if or when he'll be back. I think that was the first nail in the coffin for that team when he wasn't able to return and start a training camp, because he changes everything for them in terms of how they run and how they play offensively and the defense, point of attack defense too. So, yeah, I don't know, man. You've got Billy Donovan's name coming up in Kentucky rumors. He said he hadn't talked to them, and given why he left Florida in terms of recruiting and all that, I have a hard time believing he would want to go back to the college game. But I'd imagine watching that sequence happen, like, tell my agent to call these people. that was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Chicago's just in a tough spot. You know, yeah. I hope that Lonzo Ball can make it back. They obviously have a great defensive player in Alex Caruso there. DeMar DeRozan's been very solid. Vucevic is on the decline of his career. But, I mean, they're still in playoff contention. So, like, it's not all bad, despite, you know, these blunders, late season blunders, to kind of, you know, bring it all home. But one of the players that I feel like that's been more frustrating for fantasy managers over the last couple of years has been DeAndre Ayton. And for whatever reason, he's like one of the only people that we pegged to be a shutdown candidate that just hasn't shut down. Like, he's been top 40 over the last month, top 10 over the last week. And he's starting to develop a chemistry with Scoot Henderson, which is great to see. How much stock are you putting into this being the real version of Ayton, someone that you can expect to be a top 40, top 50 player year in, year out? Or is it just, you know, it's silly season and he's taking advantage of the fact that people don't take the Portland Trailblazers seriously and he's just getting his? I'll start, go to you, Raph.
Yeah, I don't put too much stock into it. I was one of those people who thought he could be like a top 50 player before this season began. It didn't really work out that way until guys started getting hurt. Whether you talk about Jeremy Grant, Anthony Simons, Shaedon Sharp, that really cleared the deck for Ayton to put up, I wouldn't call them empty stats, but it's not really impacting winning. And I don't know, because of those absences, I can't put too much into it. I think the good thing is that he and Scoot Henderson are working better together. So that's something for Portland to build on. We got some good young talent that's still on the floor as well. But yeah, I don't think anyone should expect like a top 50 year for Ayton with a healthy roster next season, personally.
Yeah, I think it's exciting to see both of them play well, especially Scoot, because we expect rookie point guards to struggle early, but kind of also expecting him to figure things out once Portland started tanking, because we knew that was going to happen. I did expect Ayton to sit, but seeing him play has been fun. But you mentioned, Raph, that was exactly what I was going to say, is no Anthony Simons, no Shaedon Sharp, no Jeremy Grant. Like, those guys are going to come in and take shots. Yeah. They did at the beginning of the year, and Ayton wasn't able to put up these kind of numbers. I think that I'm a little bit more optimistic about him than I was heading into this year, but that also kind of factors in with just how low I was on him entering this season. But seeing them kind of develop chemistry has been, I think, exciting for Portland's future. But you have all those guys coming back healthy and adding in potentially another top five pick. I don't see Ayton sustaining this. I mean, Basketball Monster has him 13th over the past 2 months, 21 over the last 2 weeks. Like, he's not going to keep that level of production up. But I think top 50 is pretty realistic, especially if the whole team kind of realizes, hey, this guy is pretty good when we give him the ball. And then, yeah, that kind of leads to some numbers. So hopefully that'll happen next year and it won't turn into everybody else shooting the ball and Ayton not getting his.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting, Scoot. Of the top assists that he has on his team, most of them have gone to DeAndre Ayton, Duop Reith, Jabari Walker, and Jeremy Grant. So obviously he's making a point to get some kind of chemistry with those big men and getting those easy buckets. So hopefully we'll see a little bit more efficiency gains out of Scoot next year. Obviously the field goal percentage is one thing, but the turnovers is certainly something that's more concerning if you're talking about a nine category player. But I mean, he did have what, 15 plus assists? Yeah,
15 assists last night.
Yeah. Which was, I mean, that's pretty sure that that was a franchise record for a rookie. So Scoot does do some good things. He's just got to put this together for a full season. And I think now that he's kind of seen what the NBA speed and pace is like, you know, we'll be in for better things going into next season. Let's talk to the good part of the show, because most fantasy leagues are done. I think we can do a little bit revisionist history of like what this season was. So I know that you guys, as well as Zach Hanshu, participated in a roundtable for fantasy MVPs this season. And I was kind of surprised to see a couple of the names on the list, mainly because I'm like looking through the MVP list of Yahoo and I'm like, these guys are like mid tier. They're on some teams, but not a majority of the public teams that won first place in their respective fantasy leagues. But Noah, your team, Anthony Davis. Tell me why you think Anthony Davis is the fantasy MVP this year.
Yeah, first of all, I didn't realize we were writing as much as we were. So I fixed that for the first one. The MVPs, I wrote like six sentences and everybody else had paragraphs. I was like, oh, shit, I got to come back better. Once, but fixed
that. You got the point across, man. I believe it.
Yeah. But the fact that AD, you know, was able to play as many, and he's not going to end up playing. Oh gosh, what's he at now? Is he at 74? And if he doesn't play the rest of the season, he's not going to get his career high. His career high for games played is 75.
He's at 76.
It's 74.
Right, 74.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd make me mad because I've been hyping up the past couple of like podcasts and blurbs I've done saying, oh, he's about to do it, guys. He's about to hit his career high for games played. Now he's going to stuck at 74 because of a headache. But I think he's a guy that, you know, going into the season, many people were saying, oh, like, I don't even know if I take him first round. Like, he's got to be going in the second round. I was on board with that because even though he's top five per game, like, he's only going to play 50 games. Like, he might play less. Who knows? Because that's what he's been doing the last few years. So the fact that he was not only able to continue to play as well as he has been, he was able to play 74 games at least, and then hopefully one or two more to get that record, because that would be cool. But I remember I was doing a mock draft preseason, and it was like a live show, and I picked him at 16, and they were clowning me on the show trying to say that was a ridiculous pick, like he's gonna get hurt. And I was like, no, like, I'm pretty comfortable taking him at 16. He's not a guy I love to draft, but getting him at 16, so it's like, imagine having AD taken at 16th and he's, you know, top five in both per game and total value. So that's why he's the MVP for me. It's the fact that he was finally available after kind of sliding down draft boards because of his lack of availability.
Mic drop. Totally agree with you, man. I mean, that's crazy, like, that he played 74 games this year. Like, off of the rip, him and Kawhi Leonard won you fantasy leagues because they were actually available and where you got them in your draft. And Raf, you're on Victor Wembanyama along with Zach Hanshu. Why do you think Wemby is the fantasy MVP?
My thing was his Yahoo ADP. I think it's 24. So you're looking at late second round pick. If you played your cards right with your first round pick to get him at that point in the draft, we didn't know what type of value it would represent at the time, but given what he's done, that's incredible value for him. Even with the occasional turnover issues, everything else he brings to the table, he practically wins you the block shots category by himself in category league. So that was my reasoning behind him, the value. Plus, you know, the production is why I went with him as my MVP.
No disagreements there, man. I didn't get any shares of Victor Wembanyama because the price was too high. And, you know, it ended up being that was a great price for what you got for production. And I think a lot of fantasy managers didn't expect him to play 70 games this year. I didn't expect him to play that much. As much as Popovich played, you know, hey, we're not going to start him at center. We're going to manage his minutes. It actually wound up being the best thing for his development, right? Like,
that's the other thing. It's like what he could have been if they didn't say start Jeremy Sochan at the point to begin the year. That would be the bigger issue for me than them managing his minutes, because obviously he had a lot of basketball to play over in France last season. So I get that part. But the whole Sochan at the point bit was – that would set a few guys back a peg. Maybe that did in terms of his overall value, but for him to be what he was in spite of that, I think that would be, that was another reason why I had him as my fantasy MVP.
I think that that's fair, man. Yeah, and Trey Jones, his value obviously spiked once he got to play with Wembanyama more. Everybody from fantasy circles to pundits were saying, what are you doing, Popovich? But it probably was a good thing for Jeremy Sohan in his future development. Yeah. Like, he's going to be a great player in a dunker spot, I feel like, in a few years. Mm-hmm. He could be like an Aaron Gordon type of dude that could really play off of Wembanyama at that around the painted area very well. So, yeah, I think those are both really good arguments. My choice was Kawhi Leonard. Kind of gets screwed up a little bit depending on when your playoffs ended, because he wasn't really available when you needed him, which is like the joke on Kawhi Leonard. but if you look in totality, he was there for the fantasy managers throughout the season. You know, this is a guy that you got in probably the third, fourth round because of his injury concerns that wound up being a first round value in 9 cat leagues. So just an outstanding year from an efficiency perspective for Kawhi Leonard. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, like, if he can replicate, you know, playing 65 plus games, because now there's so much incentive behind, you know, whether you make all NBA and all this stuff to your contracts. Maybe it's going to push these guys a little bit more to stay on the court. But, you know, I think for Kawhi Leonard's sake, it was more about he just finally felt healthy enough to play that many games. So it's just great to see. On the flip side of that, let's talk about some unsung heroes, guys that were probably not even on your radar or were pretty much unrosterable or not even useful for much of the season that showed up in the fantasy playoffs. I wrote an article about it on Yahoo last week. I had three names. It was Jalen Green, number one, Josh Giddey, number two, and then actually Jordan Poole. And I feel like we could always make the case for Jordan Poole. He was terrible all year, but I'm curious of what you guys thought of the unsung heroes that could be waiver wire or just a guy that showed up that was pretty much bad all year.
I think for us, we took a different approach in terms of like season-long unsung heroes. And my pick was Grayson Allen. Like, he was someone who was clearly going to be in that rotation in Phoenix once they made the trade, because they were definitely interested in getting him as part of that three-team deal with Milwaukee and Portland. But I don't think anyone expected him to be a near top 50 player in terms of fantasy value. So I don't think he's going to make that 50, 40, 90 territory just because of the free throw percentage. It's a couple points below that. And he doesn't really get the volume to shift that at this stage in the season. So for him to be close to a top 50 player, given his role, also with Bradley Beal, the amount of time he missed due to injury, that was the reason why he was my pick for unsung hero fantasy basketball.
Shoot, he helped me out a lot in industry pickup. I was able to get him off the waiver wire, and he kept my team afloat when I was dealing with injuries basically everywhere else. Like, I love the Grayson Allen pick. I went with, like you were saying, Raph, kind of like a season-long, almost like a breakout candidate is the way that I took it. And I went with Jalen Johnson, who was drafted outside the top 100 in Yahoo leagues, but he's been a top 50 guy. Obviously, the ankle has been a little bit of an issue, especially more recently. But preseason, he was a guy that was coming off the bench and was, you know, has upside, but are the Hawks going to give him minutes? My main thing was, is the shot going to be there enough for the Hawks to feel comfortable with having him at the four? Or is Sadiq Bey going to keep starting just because they can give out some space for Trae Young and DeJounte Murray to operate? But Jalen Johnson, I think he shot 35% from three, which is, I think it was 28 the year before. He's been shooting them a lot more. He had a game where he shot 11 threes the other day, and it's like, does he need to shoot that many? Probably not. But the fact that he is just shows his confidence, and that's going to make the defense respect it. So on top of just being a breakout player, he's also been just phenomenal for fantasy. And I don't know, he's not a guy that's going to be drafted outside of the top 50 next year, I can tell you that.
Yeah,
he's definitely looking like a top fourth rounder type of guy easily. I could see the case for someone jumping, you know, late third, even just for what he could do and the upside there. In the vein of season long, I'd probably go around the same draft area as Jalen Johnson. I'd probably go with Coby White. Definitely should have been considered for most improved player of the year as Jalen Johnson and several others. But you were getting him probably, you know, after round 10 in a lot of leagues, like once he started getting the hype train building and maybe moved up to like around 9 or something like that. But, you know, he's been great all season. had to do some injuries later in the season, but I think overwhelmingly, I think Coby White's been outstanding. I mean, I wouldn't expect him to be, you know, anything more than probably a top 80, top 90 guy. And, you know, he wanted to be in top 60 for quite some time in the season. So, yeah, I'll give the nod to Coby White on that one. Curious of what your guys, who your playoff MVPs were, your unsung heroes of the playoffs.
I'd go Jalen Green. I think the jump that he made late in the season, it happened, you know, right around the time. It started before Alperen Şengün got hurt, but it really took off once he went down. So he would be my pick in terms of a guy that could potentially have played a part in you winning your league if you stuck with him to that point.
How about you, Noah? Mine kind of depends on when your playoffs were. So in one of my leagues, like the championship ending kind of like that late March, like the 24th-ish, along with some of the guys that like you guys have mentioned, like I love the Jalen Green, Jordan Poole, those guys have like really kicked it on late. Jalen Green's probably the one that had the longest stretch of production. But I want to throw out, I mentioned it earlier, Keon Ellis was a guy that I was able to stream because of the defensive production. That week, if your championship was March 18th through 24th, which is probably the earliest that leagues would have ended, he had a game with one steal and five blocks, and then a game with four steals and a block. The offense wasn't clicking at that point, but obviously we saw in their last game, he had 26 points, eight threes, six boards, five assists, two steals, two blocks. So depending on kind of when your playoffs and your championship were, he is a guy that I think I want to throw his name out there.
I think that's a great call. And we talked about it. I'm just really curious to see where the Sacramento Kings go next year. And if there's a possibility that this guy ends up being, you know, one of those late round guys for you in fantasy. Disappointing wise, I feel like Mark Williams was the one for me that I feel like I just didn't get enough, man. Just got teased. And then, you know, we know the shenanigans with Charlotte Hornets injury reporting that he was just doubtful, eventually ruled out. So I feel like we need to see more there. Noah, who was your most disappointing player this year?
Mine was Mikal Bridges, a guy that was drafted in the second round that his per game value is outside the top 75. Obviously still playing a ton of games, but the production just hasn't been there. He had an awesome stretch to close last season. I think the expectations were really high this year, but obviously just didn't work out whatsoever. His lack of, I guess, expected success is the reason, or a big reason, that the Nets aren't going to be playing in the playoffs, because I think they were the sixth seed last year. So he's been very disappointing. And then also one of the things is him playing 82 games was supposed to be a pretty big advantage over a lot of the other stars that you were going to look at in the second round. Guys like Kawhi, Paul George, LeBron that were kind of going in that late second round, even Wemby, when we were kind of expecting them to rest him a little bit more, preserve his body, than they actually did. 82 games of Bridges was going to be better than 55, 60 games of those guys, but then they all played a ton of games. So that advantage there just was non-existent. So he was, I mean, it was a pretty disappointing season for both him and the team for me.
I'm going to go with Andrew Wiggins. I know he was like a pretty much a top 100 pick in terms of Yahoo ADP, but I did not think that the slump that he endured would go on for as long as it did. And he wasn't even getting to the foul line at that point. Like, you know, if you play basketball, I usually tell you, if your shot's not falling, get a layup, get to the foul line, just so you can get like that positive reinforcement of the ball going in the basket. He didn't seem willing to do that. And then he got hurt, and it's like, there ain't no way we're going to be drafting you next year. So I think, like, Mikal Bridges, even though he disappointed, you'd still probably draft him at a reasonable point. I think Wiggins played poorly to the point where you're going to have managers just swear off of him completely heading into drafts in the fall.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm curious to see where, you know, the Golden State Warriors go with their cap situation and contracts coming off the books, and who are they going to bring in the door? What's up with Wiggins? He's been going through some personal issues over the course of the last two seasons. His play suffered. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of falls out of fantasy viability going forward. Say one thing that won't be disappointing, though, this Saturday, the Premier League continues on NBC when Bruno Fernandes and Man United look to keep pace with the top half of the table when they face Bournemouth. The match starts at 12:30 Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. I saw Bruno rip a half. I guess you call it a half-court shot, but it's more of like a chip from way of the pitch.
Midfield. Yeah.
Midfield. There we go. Midfield. See, that's why I got to have my soccer guru here on the horn with us. But yeah, that was pretty impressive. So yeah, tune into that. But let's talk to the schedule. We've already touched on it quite a bit here. There's not really much you can do if you're still playing fantasy right now. You're really just streaming on Wednesday and Thursday. So we've talked about a few names that might pop up. And to be honest, I would love to give more names, but the injury reporting just keeps on getting longer and longer. And we're bootstrapping at this point, right? Like, we're going to be digging into the trenches for some of these names. But is there anyone that stands out for you guys, being that there's no back-to-backs on Wednesday, Thursday, so you pretty much have to choose, start somebody on Wednesday, start somebody on Thursday, and then, you know, Friday and Sunday, the last 2 days of the week for the season, they're large 15-game slates, so you're not really going to be able to stream anyone on those nights. So, no, I'll start with you. Anyone that you're picking up that kind of stands out?
I guess not in particular at this point, because like you said, the injury reports are so messy. I guess one of the ones that might kind of stand out is with the Clippers, with the fact that they're without Kawhi, without Paul George, and then Russ is questionable. You could make an argument for a guy like Bones Highland, but I don't feel like super confident in that. But if you need a streamer tonight, he might step into 30 plus minutes, and then just dropping whoever you pick up on Wednesday to try and get one of those guys that plays on both Thursday and Friday is probably just the most viable strategy there.
How about you?
I think Jabari Walker, you know, Jabari Walker, Chris Murray in Portland, they're starting. You know, it's, I don't know, man. I don't know if you've seen the movie Paid in Full, but if you're playing fantasy in week 24, it's like the scene where Ace and Mitch are sitting on the couch. You must really love the game if you're playing at this point.
Yeah,
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, there's just too many wild cards, too many people being ruled out, too many situations and implications at stake. So, yeah, I think targeting the Portland Trailblazers makes sense. The Clippers, obviously.
Utah, yeah, just look at they got a Thursday, Utah. Friday.
They do.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, Detroit probably. I mean, I'm not expecting Jalen Duren or Cade Cunningham to really give you much the rest of the season. Yeah, I think we can probably just say, look at the injury report and then just find the next man up. And I think you'll probably be a good bet to do something for you at this point. But yeah, we have some beef going on in the rap game. Maybe Drake responds. Maybe Drake responds to Kendrick Lamar this weekend. That's the rumors. But if you're not just interested in music, find all your NBC sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports to get all of their podcasts.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Yeah, I know we're talking about the Dynasty here, because we do have the Dynasty man on our show. Dynasty, Noah, we're doing a mock draft right now where it's definitely early, but I think with dynasty leagues, you can kind of, it doesn't really matter when you're drafting because you're really drafting on potential here. And I see a lot of the older guys, rightfully so, going very late in this draft, but I just want to get your early takes on how this draft is kind of progressing and some of the players that you, that have kind of stood out to you that may be on the cusp of fantasy breakout and that's being shown in where they're getting drafted. Someone like a Jalen Johnson.
That was actually one of the names I was going to bring up. But just to kind of give an overview, we have 10 teams. We're going to try and get through 25 rounds. We'll see how long that takes. But since with Dynasty, you're going to go super deep with the rosters, got to go super deep with the picks to get a good idea. A few of the interesting ones, first of all, Wemby went first. And if you're doing a Dynasty draft this summer, like, and you have the first pick, do not consider anybody else. Victor Wembanyama is the guy. He should be going first every draft. Jalen Johnson and Jalen Williams both went picks 23 and 24. Yeah, because it was early third round, 10 teams. So those guys, I mean, that's pretty high in from compared to my rankings, which I think I said this earlier, last updated after the trade deadline. I had them in the mid-30s. So that was about 10 spots earlier. And I remember people saying like, hey, like that's kind of early for Jalen Johnson, maybe not for Jalen Williams, but for Jalen Johnson. So seeing both of them go top, like second round in a 12-team league was pretty interesting, but I think it just shows how well both of them have played. Brandon Miller, it went 38th, which I was a little surprised to see him go quite that early. I was kind of expecting him to go more in like the 50s, but I love the upside there. And every single Paul George comp, I think, makes sense if you watch him or just hear him talk, because he doesn't stop talking about Paul George. I think those were the three main ones, but we are a little bit, almost to 100 picks at this point. And actually, just to bring it back up, somebody we talked about earlier, Naz Reid went 91. So if you want to see where he's at in Dynasty, Rhett Bauer took him 91st, and he is a Dynasty expert. So it's not like somebody reached on him. So it's been interesting so far, and I'm sure as we get into the later rounds, there will be some more surprising things. And just trying to see how players have risen with their recent play is kind of the goal of this. We'll call it an exercise. So,
yeah. What did you feel about me grabbing Tyrese Maxey on the turn? I think I got him.
Pick 12. I was surprised.
Ambitious.
I love it. I mean, I think the upside is certainly there. He's shown it this year. He's still young. I mean, it's not what I would have done, but I get it. you have, especially, I guess the other thing is like looking at the difference in Dynasty rankings versus you're actually building a team at this point. You now have three young Tyrese Maxey and De'Aaron Fox. So that's a pretty good young core of guys that provide some similar things.
Yeah, that's pretty much my strategy in most drafts these days, is grabbing all the guards initially and then go big heavy for a couple of rounds. So I thought it was nice to get Karl Anthony Towns in the fourth and then Jalen Duren in the fifth. Oh, yeah. I think Jalen Duren's another guy that's we'll probably hopefully see kind of rise up the ranks. You know, he could be, you know, top 60 guy next year if he actually plays and Monty Williams stops the shenanigans. But yeah, I think that it'd be nice to have Raph in one of these dynasty drafts. I'm curious to see how he would without the first pick, because last time we did a draft, this dude drafted Victor Wembanyama. I was like, all right, cool. Yeah. Like, that's no fun after that. So, yeah, curious to see like what other sleepers he's got kind of in the bag there that, you know, he would kind of have in a dynasty format. But I think it's pretty telling that not only Victor Wembanyama is easily runaway, you know, top pick in dynasty, but I think the case is certainly being made for him to be top in redraft as well. And we've talked about that a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Just his rise now, like I think he's become an undisputed 101 for me. I don't know about you, Raph. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you can still make a case for Jokic and SGA in terms of redrafts. But again, like you said earlier, Victor can win that block shot category by himself. And that's usually one of those categories that it's either feast or famine in terms of what I've found in terms of fantasy competition. So if you can get someone who can give you a one category edge from jump, I think it's very difficult to pass up.
Yeah. And being that he's a first, this is his rookie season, going into next season, Noah, what second year player now that would be a second year player are you most excited about heading into fantasy?
Honestly, I just get excited about young players finally getting minutes. So there's a lot of guys I'm pretty excited about. It might be Brandon Miller, though. And maybe it's the fact that I just went to a Hornets game and watched him have, I think, the best game of his career, where he started off like 10 for 10 in the first half. It was pretty ridiculous. But I really enjoy watching him as a basketball player and then seeing fantasy numbers kind of start to show up and good value start to show up as he plays more games. I think I'm most excited about him. And I know I said he went 38th in this draft, which was probably earlier than I would have had him. But I think I also would have taken, because that was one pick before me. So maybe I'm just a little bit upset that I couldn't get him with either of my two picks right there on the flip, because I was going to probably try and get him with one of those. So,
and how about you, Raf?
I'm going to say Amen Thompson in Houston. Miller is another one for me, but Amen Thompson, in terms of what he can do across the board, they don't really need him to be an elite scorer, but the rebounding, we've seen him put up some really impressive numbers there. Defensive stats too. So I think he's someone else, and I'm excited about heading into year two.
Yeah, mine was Asar Thompson. I don't think we got to see enough. He was great in the beginning of the season, and then Monty Williams, man. Monty got to Monty Williams. So I don't know. Hopefully something changes next year and they commit.
Hopefully he gets back healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. But yeah, that'll do it for the Roto World Basketball Show. Thank you for tuning in on Twitch. We'll be back next week, 3 p.m. Eastern time. For Raphael Johnson, Noah Rubin, thank you for joining us. Always great to have your basketball insight. Von Delzell will be back. Until then, we'll holler at you. Peace.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.